Chapter 1. Royal Dornoch.
Good afternoon. This is game number 42. On the tee, from Fresno, California, USA, Mr. Lucas Friend.
The Scottish brogue of starter Roddy MacDonald was loud and clear. It was 1:20 p.m. on the first day of the Carnegie Shield, the prized amateur event at Royal Dornoch Golf Club in Scotland. The date was August 12, 2056, the 150th anniversary of the first Shield tournament, when Andrew Carnegie, from nearby Skibo, had donated a trophy of priceless value to his favorite golf club in the world. Andrew had grown up around the small village of Dornoch, which would become Royal Dornoch when the king himself said so a few years later. Andrew's immigration to America for business, fame, and fortune never dimmed his love affair with life and golf and Dornoch. The same could be said of Lucas Friend. Now 72, he played in the high handicap division with 14 strokes needed every round to fight with old man Parr. Age itself had finally gotten the best of him. His glory years when he once played in the U.S. Amateur in 2018 at Pebble Beach were long gone. He was just 34 then, and at the apex of a mediocre amateur golf career. The fact that he qualified for match play and lost 6-5 meant nothing now. After 50 years of work on Wall Street, he had retired and was now enjoying golf and family. Palm Desert in the winter and Scotland in the summer. Royal Dornoch was the highlight. He was one of hundreds of international members who made annual pilgrimages to the holy site. Old Tom Morris had laid out the original modern course in 1892, but golf had been played on the links since 1616. And of course, the legendary Donald Ross had been the first greenskeeper and professional at Dornoch, learning all the nuances of golf at his beloved home course. One could say Dornoch was literally the home of golf, had St. Andrews not stolen the title. Dornoch's geography, 60 miles north of Inverness, made it difficult to locate in the age before cars and bridges and helicopters and airplanes. But now, Dornoch had become a dream destination for nearly all golfers. So at 1:20 sharp, Lucas nodded a "play well" to his Scottish companions, Alastair from York in England, and Malcolm from Lossiemouth, a small village just around the corner from Inverness. Alastair and Malcolm nodded in return. Lucas hit his drive into one of the sneaky bunkers on the left. Downwind, and off they went, taking their first steps into golf paradise. After many decades of being among the top 10 courses in the world, so said all the golf magazines, Royal Dornoch had finally arrived at the pinnacle, ranked consensus number one. Pine Valley, Royal County Down, Augusta, and Pebble Beach were not happy about it. But decades of persistence and persuasion had finally convinced the golfing press that Dornoch was, in fact, by every available measure, the greatest golf course in the world. How could a par 70 layout that plays less than 7,000 yards be called the greatest? The conversation around that question kept clubhouse bars busy for hours into the night, especially if the whiskey was flowing. It helped when Dornoch finally built a new clubhouse in 2030, and also helped when they built a new hole, the seventh, which became a signature hole in 2020. It was a 480-yard par 4 overlooking the entire North Sea. The hole had joined the 14th hole, known as Foxy on everyone's list of the greatest par 4s in the world. But the clincher was when the R&A finally, following the USGA's lead, put distance limits on equipment and golf balls in 2042. With one stroke of the pen, par 70 and 6,850 yards was back. The monsters of almost 8,000 yards were now seen as what they were. Monsters. Golf sanity had been restored, and with it, Royal Dornoch had become the greatest golf course in the world.